Do you mean in the sense of inscrutable?
No, I mean in the sense of devious, sly, creative, if you will. And that's one of our problems, of course, that most of the Americans don't understand the Chinese or the Vietnamese. The Vietnamese and the Chinese mind are very much alike.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that there are significant differences that cultural anthropologists could tell us about, but in terms of at least the operation of categories of behavior and thinking, the Vietnamese and the Chinese are, in fact, very much alike.
Yeah.
And so, part of our training program in station, which I denied existed the last time you asked about training, I said, well, there wasn't any.
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of training.
Okay.
Went on in Washington, went on, so a little bit went on in the station. But one of the things we did, there was a very excellent article, essay type thing, two-page thing, in Time magazine back around 1965. Early 66 on the Chinese mind, and so we reproduced copies of that for our officers.
I knew that the CIA always trained its people.
Yeah.
The training is something they're fantastically famous for,
yeah.
And the best training in the world for everything.
As it turned out, of course, sir, and particularly at the end there, when they were pulling in so many contract people,
yeah.
They had a 6-week or a 2-month training program.
Wait in Vietnam?
Oh, no.
Back
here in Washington. And quite comprehensive.
Okay, now, we're getting towards the documents themselves a bit here. You had once mentioned there was a legislative mandate for, was that for the reorganization?
No.
What
I said is each agency has its own legislative mandate.
Okay.
And any formula that we came up with in terms of an ISEX type of thing,
okay,
had to be something which respected,
okay,
the independent legislative mandate.
In a sense, an agenda.
Missions and rules.
Okay.
Missions and functions.
Okay.
Missions and functions. Why does this agency exist? What are they doing?
Okay.
They
understand.
Have a job there, which is prescribed by Congress.
The CIA is supposed to set up programs. Military supposed to take them over and take them
No, not at all. U.S. aid exists for purposes defined in legislation.
Okay. Fine.
The Army exists in purposes defined in the Constitution and in legislation.
Okay.
Now, each of those, or a State Department,
okay,
has a constitutional and a legislative basis.
Mm-hmm.
Reason for its existence. And the reason it gets money, and the Congress has given it money to do carry out its purposes.
Right.
CIA, same thing.
Okay.
Okay. Now those legislative givens,
mm-hmm,
have to be respected.
Okay.
Now I, as a member of CIA, cannot set up an organizational arrangement where I'm going to spend Pentagon money.
I understand.
Unless the Pentagon gives it to me. And if they give it to me, it has to be something which is within the framework of the congressional appropriation. Because if it's not, it's an illegal transfer of funds.
Okay.
Okay. So when we set this thing up, we had to, as a matter of fact, we put the proviso on this thing. How does it say? It's a recommendation. Oh, no. Well, what we did was write it in such a way that the agencies would still provide their own money,
right,
and their own personnel and their own direction, but we were creating a machinery by which they would be directed to a specific purpose.
Okay, I understand. Just as a side note, how are your, can we talk about how the reports are self-correcting and self-improving,
okay,
just for a second?
Okay. We're talking about self-improving performance,
mm-hmm,
or a report system is fostering self-improvement. Well, it's easy to get, it's easy to wander around a great deal on that. Basically, that's the, I think it's chapter 4, chapter 5 of Mrs. Martin. So she,
no, but she read it, she gobbled it up, you know.
She didn't recognize it? Because this is one of the
classics. Oh, yeah, what she recognized. And what?
It's chapter 13 on the function of measurements.
Okay.
That is truly relevant to what we're talking about. The basic idea is that if a person knows what is expected of him, and if he,
right,
and if he is provided some kind of objective measurement of his performance in terms of that expectation,
okay,
then he is going to strive to do better. It's
okay.
That simple. Basically, ultimately, it's that simple.
Okay.
So that the report system was structured, and I talk about that in these documents, by the way.
Good.
The report system is structured to focus on what's expected of him, and to ask him questions, the answers to which reflect how well he's doing it.
Very good.
And self-improvement, if you will, orientation to it.
Okay.
The next step beyond that is that if you have an objective system of measurement, and that's why the name of this chapter here is the function of measurements.
Okay, so it is 13, not 4.
Chapter 13, okay. Yeah. I thought there was just chapter 4. I only thought there were about 5 or 6 chapters in here, but there's 13 or 14.
Okay.
The chapter, function of measurements, Likert is, or Likert, I guess it's Likert, I don't know how it's pronounced. He's another Dutchman, Rensis.
Yeah. My sister, incidentally, who's a doctor of sociology and teaches at Nazareth College in Rochester, she was very familiar with him also.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, no,
I mean, this guy's been seminal in American organizational theory.
What I talked about,
that's his Herbert Simon.
People, everybody knows him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Well, see, that's where I bought the book. X number of
$316. Oh, so you bought it in Vietnam?
Yeah, I bought it in this.
Okay.
In Vietnam, had a bunch of things. The next step beyond the individual focusing on his own performance,
mm-hmm,
and performance measurement is that if you have an objective system of measurement,
okay,
when you can circulate openly the performance results for various groups, which are or could be competitive. In any event, when people see their own performance reflected against the scale, then they try to do better.
Okay.
And that's what this is all about. There's actually chapter 13, function of measurements,
mm-hmm,
and then there's chapter 12 and chapter 11. I wouldn't try to read the whole book.
Okay, very good.
But I would suggest that you, chapter 11, nature of highly effective groups.
Okay.
Chapter 12, chapter 13, function of measurements. It's the ideas are there.
That clears that up perfectly,
yeah,
for me.
The thing about it is that our guys, we did not provide the feedback from central headquarters that Likert system theoretically involves. But certain things you can't. Certain things aren't comparable. You couldn't compare I-4 to 4-4,
right,
for example.
The situation, the circumstances,
yeah,
are just too different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But perhaps what we did do, and this is a point I touch on in here, that I'll use the expression now. I was asked to create by John Hart originally, to create a general staff for pacification,
yeah,
or counterinsurgency, I forget the word I used. Actually created not a general staff planning body, but an executive action organization. What we what the purpose of this whole thing was to create a structure.
Just repeat that for me.
Yeah, instead of creating a general staff, planning staff for past vacation, we actually created an executive action agency.
Okay. Okay.
Now then the...
Which includes the station chief, the J2, the J3, and all those...
What we focused on was getting the job done rather than planning and thinking about it.
Okay, okay.
My point, as reflected in the paper, is that we've done all the thinking necessary. We've got all the pieces here,
but
we have to make them work together.
Okay.
And we have to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you do, do it well.
Okay.
And so the object of the exercise in the ISEX thing was to take advantage of the known explosive or dynamic character, if you will, of Robert Comer.
Yeah, okay.
And put him in a position to, and put the agency directors to put their feet to the fire.
Yeah.
To measure results and to let these guys see whether they're doing a good job or a bad job and do something about it.
Now, if the 44 people for ISEX are selected in April, does this mean that Comer has this idea in mind before April?
No. All that is that they're getting some, or the agency is recruiting some people to send out to countries. As this was part of this business of the agency running into, the agency worked out its own deal.
Okay.
To get military officers.
Okay. That starts out a
part
that
really,
then becomes a...
And after, I guess they say, well, it's a presidential program or something. I don't know. They give it a lot of glamour.
But these things could have been happening simultaneously together.
I think that's exactly what happened.
Okay, very good.
I don't know.
How long did it take you to write up ISEX?
Said there were two of us.
Yeah.
And
John Hall.
John Hall, I think that was his name.
Could it have been Green?
No.
No, okay.
No way.
You know that guy, John Green?
John Green, it doesn't ring any bells
at all.
He focused on the automatic data processing end of this thing.
Okay.
And I focused on the organizational end.
Was that tied into the Combined Intelligence Center?
No. Not at that time. Not at that time. That came later.
That's McChristian's.
Yeah, that's thing. McChristian's thing.
All right, but they eventually do get tied in. That's Big Mac.
Well, I suppose so. I don't know. That happened after I.
Did you hear about? You know about Big Mac reporting system?
No.
Okay. Well, I think. I know what's his name. Ralph Johnson gets into it.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Big Mac becomes the big deal.
Yeah.
Okay, and so. The computerization of all this stuff. Okay.
Well, we talk about that here, and Hall or whatever his name was talks about it in here.
Very good.
But it did not take us long. The first paper, which was a concept for organization for attack on BC infrastructure.
Yeah, that's the 22 November.
Was dated 22 May. 1967.
Okay.
That's this paper here. Okay.
Okay. What about the 22 November one?
That was just done as a briefing paper or whatever. That had nothing to do with anything.
Okay.
I mean, I gave a copy to Comer. I mean, but that, it may even have been written for him when he came in one of his visits to the country.
Okay.
Who knows? I don't remember what prompted that particular memory.
There seems to be so much of it in the rest of it, though, that it just...
these things are all evolving and coming together and so on. And it's Comer's coming out there is what was going to make the big difference.
Okay.
We could do this OCO thing, which we did, and we wind up sort of in just another bureaucratic foul-up.
Yeah.
But Comer, I think, did make something out of it, which... Wade, what's his name?
Latham.
He was the chief of OCO, as I remember.
That's right.
That he never did. They brought in all these brains from Rand Corporation and that kind of thing on program evaluation upstairs
mm-hmm.
and all that, and they had these people that, I think Danny Graham was one of them.
Yeah, he may have Defense been Intelligence there. Agency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he came, then what happened was Danny Graham came back and headed that same shop up here in the agency because Bill Colby got out to Vietnam and he looked at this thing and decided he liked it.
So okay.
It was a mess.
But he also testified at Westmoreland's trial.
Danny Graham.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember how he testified, but
he backed up West. He was
right behind.
Yeah, right behind.
I'm not surprised because he's one of the ultra right ringers. He's one of the Star Wars people, and I know some people that are connected with him.
Mm.
And I'm afraid of these people.
They scare me.
Yeah. They scare me. This is the 22 May 67, the paper for Comer,
mm-hmm.
and it says not adopted, which it wasn't. Comer said, I don't want a concept paper. He said, I want a nuts and bolts, missions and functions paper.
Okay,
so 22 May was not accepted by anybody.
Okay.
Least of all, it had all already been staffed through the station. I mean, in concept, it was approved. And Comer says, yeah, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I want more. And so it was out of that that came the early June paper, the undated paper that Johnson talks about. Except he's got it screwed up here. And this is where it was screwed. Ralph Johnson says that okay, Ambassador Comer, let's see, a concept, blah, 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 blah.
You got, is that a page number?
That's page, it's page here, 170.
Okay.
But there was another previous, let's see.
Because if that...
It says Ambassador Comer reacted enthusiastically, placing Brigham's memorandum within a formal proposal by Cord's Revolutionary Development. This proposal could be presented to key members of the U.S. mission in Washington for approval. Then the end run it has is this, the end run. When Comer said, your concept paper is not what I want. Mm-hmm. I want a missions and roles, missions and functions paper. I want something of the military style, which the military can understand.
The end run.
Yeah. Okay. See, so this is not a response to the Brigham proposal. This was a response to Comer's rejection of this concept paper.
Okay. Okay.
You follow me?
Yep.
So nobody, this was not a response, it was a follow-up, detailed missions and functions elaboration of the concept paper of 22 May.
Okay.
Now this, John and I, and the secretary, we had two secretaries type.
Because this one was rejected.
Right. Or let's say it was not adopted.
Yeah, right.
Let's put it that way.
It was sent back for revision.
It was sent back for amplification. Comer said, I cannot go to General Westmoreland with this paper.
Okay. Very good.
So we wrote this one. Well, that's 22 May on that. This would be, let's say, early June. I'm surprised we didn't have a date on it, but we didn't. And I don't know what it was, but it had to be before I left.
Okay.
Because I remember John and I and two girls stayed up probably till 3 o'clock in the morning getting that damn thing out so that, you know, the Comer would have it.
Okay.
And so there we are.
Okay, so Ambassador Comer reacted enthusiastically. In a sense, that's true, because he liked the idea, but he wanted it revised. So he didn't place that memorandum within a formal proposal by Cord's Revolutionary Development. He places the follow-up of June 67.
This paper is the one that went to Westmoreland,
yeah,
and to the ambassador,
okay,
and to Washington, and to the chief of station,
mm-hmm,
to the chief of aid, and everything else.
Does the May one have a title? Same title?
What? The 22 May?
Yeah. That one's a concept for organization, and this one's called a proposal. Okay. Very good.
So those two documents are intimately related.
Yeah, yeah. One's an extension of the other.
Yeah.
Takes a concept and develops it into a plan.
But then in addition,
yeah,
it has the annex of dealing with the special problems.
Yeah.
It has the annex of one or two annexes dealing with trip report on the dioxin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it has an annex on ADP operations.
Right, yeah.
And this is where the Big Mac gets in there, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's one of the things that was supposed to be done.
Were you around for the Hamlet evaluation system, HESS and all that stuff?
Yeah, because we had one earlier, and then Comer wanted to set up a new one. And I was always been wary of those things. But Comer seemed to be about as idiot-proof as any. And there has to be some kind of, you know, some kind of measurement. And the great problem, of course, was McNamara and everything, and trying to run a war by computers. So everybody was always trying to come up with numbers and crunching numbers.
So you probably knew that guy Kantorowski, Stanley Kantorowski?
No.
He was supposed to be Alain Entovan? Oh, they were his, McNamara's whiz kids,
yeah, but
with
they,
the computers.
Yeah, they didn't have anything to do with station equipment.
Well, I'm sure you'll find this all very interesting. He spends an awful lot on the on introducing the situation. He doesn't get to Isaacs until page 156.
Yeah, well, okay. Also, for the first time, he says here that this is Johnson. He says that proposal for coordination management and intelligence program, blah, blah, gave the deputy for cords a working plan of carrying bureaucrat. That's exactly so.
Okay.
It was a workable document, an integrated plan. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Also, for the first time, the acronym ISEX was coined. Well, actually, the term was coined before then.
Okay.
It's the first time it was surfaced.
Okay.
In interagency. Jargon.
It's in May that Hart asks you to write this thing up. And
well,
that's,
it would
is
be,
that when the,
it'd be end of April, early May, okay, something like that, yeah.
So that's probably when the term is coined, end of April, early May?
No, a little way. Sometime in there. Maybe one of the meetings that we had on this concept paper. I don't know. I can't tell you.
Okay.
But Hart says, well, we'll call this intelligence coordination exploitation. ISACs. He says, I like that, ISACs.
Okay.
So everybody said, fine. Okay, now there's, we'll have more to say about this when we run through my notes, but.
Okay, because I only have two questions left myself. I would like to know.
Why don't you give me the questions and then we can see what we want to do with them.
Right? One question is, articulate for me the role of the Missile Task Force of 1958, that MI6 paper,
yeah,
on the ISEX concept.
No, there was no relationship.
Okay.
I was citing that. You had asked about a brief resume, so to speak, of my agency, what I'd done in the agency before I went out to
Vietnam.
And
that was the achievement.
That was one of my major accomplishments.
Okay.
If there's a connection between the two, and there is a slight one.
Yep.
The connection is that it's just my mind, that's all, that from the very beginning.
Okay.
I've been a person that tries to take an overall systems approach, if you will.
Yeah.
I should say that an approach which years later was labeled a systems approach.
Right. Okay.
Was involved. There's just one document in that regard. I thought I'd. If I can. I thought I had the darn thing here. This is Corners table.
June 67, cable for Helms from Comer. 1. Wish to commend Nelson Brickham for outstanding job in helping design new attack on infrastructure. From my vantage point, he contributed a great deal, and I am only sorry we are losing him at crucial point. 2. Because of crucial importance of carrying on efforts initiated by Brickham, or as a result of his advice to GVN, urge he be used at least temporarily in agency to support new anti-infrastructure startup program in Vietnam. Though I understand necessity for his ration, hope Brickham can also be made available. Okay, be made available for occasional TDY in Vietnam if critical problems arise. There you go.
58, 59.
Okay.
Well, I mentioned the Missile Task Force and the British response to that.
Okay. Okay, that's 3 August 59.
And,
very good.
And this is Jack Morey memorandum for DDI, but which has Alan Dulles's initials on it.
Ah. That's the original document too, huh?
Well, not that one. No, that was an original copy.
The original copy, okay. Well, when I was flying into...
The thing about that one, I go ahead and read that one.
Okay.
It's,
I'll put this here.
Illustrates the cast of mind that I claim.
Memorandum for Deputy Director, Intelligence, subject George Kennan's.
Yeah.
Comments on OCI Soviet staff. 1. In a brief chat I had with Mr. Kennan just before his departure yesterday, he expressed some views about the work of the boys in OCI, which may not have been made known to you, but which I am sure will be of interest. He said that the concepts and techniques of the OCI team in attacking the Soviet problem were producing results beyond anything that had been accomplished by any Western government, and that during his visit he felt he had learned far more from them than they had been able to learn from him. John M. Morey, Jr., Chief, SI Division. Initialed by
Alan Dulles. The thing here is that this was the project I told you about, our Project Caesar,
mm-hmm.
which Jim Hanrahan and myself.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Kennan was talking about.
Yeah.
George Kennan, he's the great Soviet expert, and he was the famous X that wrote the Foreign Affairs article in 1949.
Oh, okay. So, how about that?
And he's one of the six wise men that the book has just been published in.
Sure.
George Kennan,
uh-huh.
Errol Harriman, what is it, George Burrell, whoever the six were, Chip Bowen. Yeah, so George Kennan was, he was the great Soviet expert in the U.S. government at that time.
Okay.
So that was rewarding. That's what I'm saying, though, that you were talking about you want to read that cable to authenticate my credentials, so to speak.
Yeah.
Here is the piece of paper that shows that I graduated magna cum laude at Yale. So,
wouldn't that be on your diploma also?
Well, as a matter of fact, it's not. I've gone back and compared my diploma. I went back and they called it higher rations at the time, but they're...
I see.
It's class of 49.
With Lulu yesterday, he said he had been 3-Corps Roik. Is that true? He'd been the 3-Corps...
As a matter of fact, he was, yeah.
And he Bob Wall replaced him.
I think so.
Okay.
Luigi was, he was not Roik material.
No, okay.
And John Hart, Well, we'll come to that after lunch.
Okay.
I mean, if you have more time to spend, that's what I was going to suggest.
Oh, I'd love to spend some more time.
What I was going to suggest, since my wife took the car this morning, that we run down and have a crab cake sandwich or something.
Oh, I'd love to.
In Edgewater, and then we can come back and finish up.
That'd be fun.
For the day, that is, at any rate.
Okay, and then my last two questions. Sure. Do you know a man named Clyde Bauer?
Well, not right offhand, but tell me more about him.
Okay, he was in it.
In much earlier. And
are they regarding at all
the documents?
The documents.
Well, no, not per se. We've been through. The major point about the documents was this mix-up that Ralph Johnson made about the relationship between these several people.
Seeing one as a response to the other.
Seeing one as a response, which it was not.
Okay.
It was an elaboration.
Okay.
One of the major questions involved in all of this is that one of the major points I wanted to make was that we chose a certain solution, as I mentioned last time, that we did this over the objections of or without regard for headquarters views, and as a matter of fact, in direct opposition to one of their instructions on Colby's cables from Washington. But the effort still was to make a viable structure using Comer's dynamism as the means by which to hold the feet to the fire of these various agency directors, USAID, Public Safety Division Chief, the military people, and the CIA, and so on. So that's what was behind ISEX. The important thing, or the point I wanted to bring up, was that there were other options,
mm-hmm.
which we very briefly touched upon last time. Now, the significant thing here is that most of these options, most of these decisions were decisions made in respect to OCO in the fall of 1966, so that by the time that the formation of ISEX came about, you might look upon ISEX as almost a logical evolution of affairs. But some of the other options which did exist in the fall of 66, and we had conversations with McChristian, we had conversations with a lot of people, but also with headquarters. And what we're talking about basically is the extent to which the agency is going to be involved in counterinsurgency, and what is it going to do with the liaison branch field operations and the paramilitary operations and so on. And so one of the major options was simply to withdraw from these activities and turn them over to the South Vietnamese government and or the U.S. military. And that was a major option given serious consideration. Another option was limit participation in these activities and to reduce the level of commitment. Even though we did not withdraw completely, to, at any event, return more to the classical mission of the Central Intelligence Agency as opposed to this.
Was this one of Stone's? Was this line that he was backing?
Okay. Yeah, that was what he was backing. And when the decision was made to, as a matter of fact, that's an interesting point, the decision was made to go for the deeper rather than lesser involvement, Stone said, well, I don't want it then. Take it away and put it someplace else because I don't want it.
And that's when it goes into?
That's when it goes into OCO.
Okay.
RDW, that's when they decide to bring out a deputy chief of station.
What's the W?
I wish you hadn't asked. Revolutionary Development. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
That's great help I am. The very strange proposal was that the, in contrast to the agency withdrawing or completely or limiting their level of commitment, another proposal was to
really expand the level of commitment to take over the tactical military intelligence function completely. This was advanced as a serious proposal. It was a laughable proposal.
Advanced as just a consideration, with somebody pushing it?
No, that was some people were pushing it. I think that I have no idea who. I imagine it was somebody that was hoping that the agency would bite on this thing, and then they'd wind up with mud on their face.
Okay.
That's the best, the most generous interpretation I can put on it.
Okay.
But when I heard that one, I said, no way, nothing. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard of. Which it was. What they were talking about was sector and subsector, in other words, province and district. Intelligence operations by the military, by the military province advisors, would be taken over by the CIA. But there were other facets. I said, you mean we're going to start running aerial reconnaissance missions? We're going to start running aerial photography? We're going to do this? We're going to do that? I said, screw it. I mean, that's an idiotic thing. It makes about as much sense as sending these missiles over to Romania.
Yeah.
Which is a city. I couldn't believe it.
Are these things that are discussed strictly within the station as to, or are these things that you're discussing with the Christian in the combined in a variety of forums?
No, it's a variety of forums. Most of these things took place within the station.
Okay.
But it might be that Stone might come back from a conference and say that the Christian has suggested this, or somebody else. I wouldn't want to label either names or agencies that might have come up with one or another of these.
Because it wouldn't wholly be...
I just don't remember that.
Oh, okay.
AID
must have had a position that was contrary to military, contrary to CIA.
So we did have these options available, and what we did was commit ourselves thoroughly to the counterinsurgency war, to pacification, but at the same time not to take off more than we could, not to bite off more than we could chew.
Was that within a context of, well, we're willing to give 200 men to this? And so much money?
Well, we were offered as many men as we want. Comer said you can have whatever you ask for.
Okay.
And it's at that point that they tried to get district officers, which initially I opposed.
Yeah.
And later, after and this is one of the corrections I wanted to make on the previous record, the fact that I was opposed to the DIOCs at the beginning.
Okay.
After I visited the two or three places up there, up north, and came back, and by the time I wrote this report here, mm-hmm. the early June paper, wrote those annexes to that, I had converted myself into believing in the DIOCs as an important...
Whose idea were those DIOCs? Was that would have been something from Horgan's idea?
No, it wasn't Horgan. It was in his territory. It was in I-Corps.
Yeah, it was Ta-Tien.
But I don't remember.
Maybe the province officer?
The province officers or somebody, yeah. Because somebody was hustling these things, and it wasn't Horgan.
Okay.
Jim Ward, maybe?
Yeah, he's down the Delta.
But I don't think he was yet. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't remember.
Hmm.
But Horgan wasn't hustling these, but somebody up there in I-Corps, or somebody who had visited, maybe it was Bob Wall. I don't remember.
Okay.
And then John Hart was the kind of guy who'd get a bug up his tail, you know. And so he got off the incident in DIOC, so I was sent up there. That was one of my more interesting field trips, by the way. So anyway, the major result of the fall 1966 decisions were to separate the station and the counterinsurgency effort. And that was as a result, as I say, of Stone's attitude toward this, that if it's going to be like this, he said, I want to wash my hands off of it. And he was right. I mean, it doesn't mix. It's mixing oil and water or whatever. this kind of activity versus the classical CIA operations. Now then, new subject, training.
Yeah, good.
Okay, I had mentioned last time you asked a question about training, I said, well, there wasn't very much or whatever. There was, in fact, as the program developed, Washington did set up an intensive training program of either 6 or 8 or 12 weeks duration. This would be for CIA officers, but more importantly for ex-military or ex-police officers who were being brought in on contract, or military officers who were assigned to the agency for Vietnam. And I never really got involved in that program, and I don't know really what all they taught them.
Okay.
I know they,
but this is that program that,
but this
that,
is
that I'm
preparing
talking about.
Province officers,
yeah,
yes.
And that this was is that what, one. And this is what I'll be able to get
guys.
Through. This is the thing I'll be able to get.
Now then,
perhaps
when the guys came out to station, particularly in the beginning,
okay.
I would brief them and provide them with materials. We didn't have any training programs, but we did have prolonged briefing sessions, maybe several days there in the station before they went out to province. And we talk about situations, we'd provide them papers to read, we'd provide them, at one point we were providing books, but we had to cut back on that because they were constantly disappearing.
Nobody was returning their books. Huh?
One of the most important books that I think was ever, in terms of my experience in Vietnam, was this Village in Vietnam. I may have mentioned that to you over the telephone. I forget the author. It was a big book. It was a cultural anthropological book. It was a study of a village in the Delta, or on the edge of the Delta Saigon Plateau. And then a second study that they went back 10 years later and did the same study all over again. And this book was the result of that. And it would consider the Vietnamese peasant personality in a systematic way. And it was, as far as I'm concerned, it was the most valuable single thing available to anybody. But it gave them, it gave us their religion and their ethics. And their,
so you would learn about Hoa and Cao Dai and all the different sects.
Well, okay. No, it didn't go into any of those religious sects per se. I might mention them if they had affected this particular village, but
okay.
was more.
Okay.
But this was
Confucian,
more a study on the village proper and its own evolution, and particularly the changes in the attitudes and outlook and so forth.
The idea that the emperor stops at the village gate and all that.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the spirits and the geomancy and the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay.
This is an outstanding book and give you a basis for. Related to the Vietnamese, that nothing else that I ever. You talk about the Chinese mind. Well, this was, which we also provided. We took copies of that Time article and gave it to these guys. That kind of thing. Briefing papers, background papers.
Because I heard from Nick Prophet that a lot of guys were coming from Czechoslovakia or European countries or wherever.
Yeah.
And really didn't know much about Southeast Asia.
Yeah, knew nothing about Asia, period.
Yeah, okay.
At least of all the Chinese. So, we did have training. We did have orientation.
Okay.
We had so-called emergency behavior, emergency procedure.
Which
what to do if your plane is shot down in VC territory, what to do. What to do if the VC overrun the village you're working on, or whatever. And bug out kits. What to do if there's a general tip-type offensive.
Bug out kits?
That's what we call them. Auto-escape.
Auto-escape.
Escape and evasion.
Okay.
Yeah. And all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if some people took it seriously, others didn't. That's always the case, you know. So, as it was, in the Tet Offensive, we lost only one officer.
Okay.
He was captured by the North Vietnamese.
I had somebody told, this fellow told me his name, up in Way, right?
Gene Weaver in Way. He's
yeah.
an SR division officer. I shouldn't say an old friend, because I never had a whole lot of respect for him. He wasn't the brightest guy that came down the pipe. Sort of lazy, a little bit lackadaisical. But apparently, the stories I get from the people...
I heard he was a hero. The story I told is that he was a hero. They were just shot a number of times protecting a couple of Vietnamese
That's
people.
That's correct. That's what I heard.
What did you hear?
What I heard was that he paralyzed. They couldn't get him out.
Okay. He froze. In
him. Froze. Yeah. Choked. Whatever. Okay. And so, in effect, they left him behind because they couldn't move him out, and the North Vietnamese got him. And that's certainly more in character than the other, although, you know, you never know what happens to a guy under crisis.
Yeah.
Until it happens. He may have been a hero.
Yeah.
It's just not the story I heard.
Yeah.
In any event, he was given back to us in the prison exchange.
Right. Right. Okay. And he did come back alive, then.
Yeah, he came back alive.
Uh-huh.
And there's no, to my knowledge, there is no evidence that the North Vietnamese ever knew what they had on their hands. Because if they did, I feel certain in my own mind that the Russians would have been in there interrogating them rather than the Vietnamese. But I don't know that for a fact. I do know that he came back and he was given a job with the agency.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure he ever came.